Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
It is Tuesday, the 12th of October, 2021. Hello and welcome to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views and interviews from an African perspective. This is a program aimed at interrogating how this glorious continent is faring in achieving the objectives set out in the African Union's Agenda 2063. My name is Luyanda Maume and I'm your host. We have a great show lined up for you today. Remember, you can find us online on www.channelafrica.co.za and on channel 802 on the DSTV audio bouquet. You can also find us on channel 628 on OpenView. If you want to keep in touch with us, you can do so via WhatsApp. It's +27 63 406 9126, and on Twitter it's at Channel Africa One.
Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
Today on the show, we bring attention to recovery efforts in Mozambique's northern region of Cabo Delgado following years of displacement brought about by violence and insurgency. We speak to an organization involved in piloting a skills development program for young people there. But before we get there, let's take you across the continent to remind you of stories you may have missed. The World Health Organization has recommended what has been described as a groundbreaking malaria vaccine for children at risk of the mosquito-borne disease. The WHO says the recommendation is based on results from an ongoing pilot program in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi that has reached more than 800,000 children since 2019. Richard Mihiko is coordinator for the WHO's Immunization and Vaccine Development Program in Africa.
What makes it different and unique? It is the first world malaria vaccine. I think we have been battling since now decades in the search for a vaccine that can prevent malaria. So this is really the first time that we have a vaccine that can provide some level of protection, mainly to children, against malaria. Remember that malaria remains one of the most deadliest diseases that we have, and it's not number one in terms of mortality and morbidity, particularly for children. So having a vaccine that is working, that is preventing that some form of severe disease, I think it's definitely a very historical moment for Africa.
In commemoration of International Day of the Girl Child yesterday, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, the Forum for African Women Educationalists, and the United Nations Girls Education Initiative, as well as UNICEF, hosted a roundtable panel discussion to highlight the importance of educating girls and the many challenges they face to complete their education journey, particularly the limitations linked to financing. Clara Van Praagh is Education Officer for the UNHCR Regional Office in Nairobi, Kenya.
We're really excited that we're able to hold this discussion on the day itself. I think there's a lot of hype around what we are doing as the international humanitarian and development community when it comes to supporting our girls, particularly because, as you mentioned, there's such a high number of girls who are still currently out of school across Africa. And so we got together with UNICEF and UNGAI, which is the UN Girls Education Initiative, to really bring together key decision makers and senior managers across all of our organizations who are working together to strengthen national education systems. They're working together with a lot of national governments and really laying out a discussion on how can we provide sustainable financing and opportunities for girls to go to school, but also to complete their educational journeys.
And finally, the Royal United Services Institute, RUSI, has released a report entitled Illegal Wildlife Trade in Uganda, Tracking Progress on Following the Money. The report represents an in-depth, independent study of Uganda's response to illicit finance generated by wildlife trafficking. Based on research conducted jointly with Uganda's Natural Resources Conservation Network and funded by USAID, the report documents how criminals operating in Uganda use illegal wildlife trade to amass and launder substantial sums of money. Listen to Kathy Heinlein, director of the Organized Crime and Policing Research Group and senior research fellow at RUSI.
Illegal wildlife trade obviously involves poaching and trafficking in wildlife commodities that have a really high value and are worth really significant sums of money. And this high value is driven really by high and sustained demand for wildlife products in many parts of the world, but especially East Asia. So if you're a wildlife trafficker in Uganda and you've got a tusk or a piece of rhino horn, you can make a lot of money by selling that. And in this research, for example, for ivory, we found that prices were being quoted by traffickers based in Uganda of between $70 and $125 per kilo for ivory. Rhino horn was even more, between $8,000 and $17,000 US dollars per kilo. So obviously, if you've got a number of kilos, that's going to make you a lot of money. And we find in the report that Uganda's a really, it's a very business-friendly environment for traffickers.
And those are some of the stories you may have missed across the African continent. We'll take a short break, and on the other side of that, we bring you that conversation I promised you. Remember, you can keep in touch with us on WhatsApp. It's +27634069126, and on Twitter, it's at Channel Africa One. Stay tuned to Channel Africa from an African perspective.
Want to live a healthier life? Then put away that salad and grab your plantains, because on Live Well, we do health the African way. Join me, Palesa Tau, on the mission of healthy African living. Mondays, 10 a.m. CAT. Live Well, healthy mind, healthy body, and a happy spirit.
This is Africa's best sport destination, Africa at Play, where there are stars, legends, and the principles of the game. Kenyan athlete Eliud Kipchoge is here, the first man in the history to complete a marathon under 2 hours. South African golden girl Caster Semenya, Sadio Mane, one of Africa's best footballers, CAF President Dr. Patrice Motsepe, Dr. Tiangwa, COSAFA President is also present, reigning world rugby champs Springboks, plus the tall height around us, that's African basketballers, Cecilia Molokwani, African netball president, volleyball, cricket, golf, tennis, boxing, and swimming, all represented.
You are listening to Africa at Play, with sport from an African perspective. Live every Saturday and Sunday from 1900 hours to 2000 hours Central African Time on DSTV Audio Bouquet, Channel 802, or streamed live on channelafrica.co.za. Africa at Play.
Building Africa with love. Hujambo, Africa. If there are holes in this continental ship, we are its children. Let us go and stop the holes. Let us gladly do it with our hearts. And if we cannot, then let us die. We will make a plug of our brains and put them into the ship, but condemn it never. Nguvu wakwatu, upinduni nguvu. Catch us on Channel Africa from 10 to 11 a.m. every Friday, and Sundays from 5 a.m. to 6 a.m.
Now, welcome back to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. Now, since 2017, Mozambique's northern province of Cabo Delgado has been dealing with violence brought about by insurgency. This has led to mass displacement that saw thousands unable to make a living. An intervention led by SADC standby forces has seen a significant decrease in violence and a relative return to normalcy. But efforts to rebuild have been particularly difficult, as most people lack basic skills to meaningfully rebuild their lives. As part of assisting the people to pick up the pieces, NGO Young Africa has pioneered a youth empowerment program, Skills to Live, meant to assist young Mozambicans with critical skills. And on the line, we are joined by Wellington Muchechetere from Young Africa International. Welcome to Africa of the Future.
Thank you, Leander.
Thank you for joining us. Now, tell us about Skills to Live and what it seeks to do.
Skills to Live is an initiative that assists to economically empower at least 1,300 young people who are HIV positive or at risk of contracting the virus, through technical vocational education training, which is integrated with entrepreneurship, life skills education. So this project envisaged to achieve three results, which was one, firstly, to improve employability, that is, include employability potential, income, health, and livelihood security. for vulnerable adolescents and young people, especially those affected by HIV in the rural, urban and border towns of Mozambique and Zimbabwe. Then the second result was looking at increasing knowledge levels and access to comprehensive sexual and reproductive health, as well as HIV information. And lastly, through this project, we wanted to try and document lessons or information to establish the core relationship between economic strengthening and sexual reproductive and HIV intervention. So basically, this is about Skills to Live. It's a pilot project that started in 2019.
Now, during the pilot phase of the project, you have already enrolled about 138 young people. Take us through some of the skills that you have already imparted.
Okay, so for the 138, in fact, these are just for Cabo Delgado in Mozambique. Actually, until May 2021, we had trained over 1,300 young people. But for the 138 that were trained in Cabo Delgado, they were trained in six trades, that is electrical installation, motor vehicle maintenance, carpentry, poultry, baking, and hairdressing. Maybe one thing that I would want you to notice that prior to us offering these skills, we conduct what we call job market assessments, which help us to understand, the market and help us to really determine which courses these young people can take on so that they can have enhanced opportunities for employment or entrepreneurship.
Now, upskilling often doesn't go far enough, Wellington. I mean, as such, there's always constant need for monitoring. Have you been able to verify how many of your cadets have been able to be gainfully employed or even employ themselves, as it were?
Yes, yeah, well, it's correct. Obviously, there are difficulties in monitoring, considering that we are working with a group that is highly mobile. But what we have done is we have been working in partnership with the International Organization for Migration, that is IOM, as well as different government departments. So through this partnership, IOM is a database of volunteers who they call change agents. They have a role of actually doing community rounds and making sure that, these young people are, in a way, trying to track what they are doing. So through working with them, they've successfully done this community round. And to just enhance their skills, we offer them a training in mentorship and coaching. So they have the role to actually go and visiting these young people. And when they hear of any job opportunities, they try to link these young people to these opportunities. I would also want to also say that since the pilot of the project, we are already in the second phase of the project, which is running until 2026. So through this second phase of the project, we are more or less trying to deepen our intervention. To say just after graduation, we need to continually support these young people. So we have come up with a new package of post-graduation support where we are introducing incubation hubs, also giving them startup kits, and also leading them to other prospective employers. So this is what we have been doing in trying to monitor and ensuring that these young people gain a form of livelihood.
That is the voice of Wellington Muchechetere from Young Africa International. He's talking to us about a project called Skills to Live that has been pioneered across the SADC region of Africa. We take a short break. We're back after this. Stay tuned to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa.
It is very important who you spend your weekends with.
Oh, of course, darling. Ask me, I know. I would rather miss a party than to miss Africa at Play.
Absolutely unbelievable!
Now that's where my weekend is at.
Africa at Play, every Saturday and Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m. Central African Time on DStv Channel 802 or streamed live on channelafrica.co.za from all the corners of the continent to the rest of the globe.
Are we going to see history here today?
Africa at Play.
With sport from an African perspective.
Brought to you by Channel Africa.
Have you ever asked yourself, what on earth am I here for?
When God placed his image in us, he placed a sense of eternity within us.
What is my purpose in life?
I was made for greatness. I just don't know what it is yet, but I was made for greatness.
Life by Design explores the journey of people from around the continent who live a life of purpose. They share their experience on how they discovered what they were meant to do. Join me, Amanda Machaga, every Monday at 8:05 Central African Time for your weekly dose of Monday Motivation. Only on Channel Africa, the African perspective.
Life by Design. Be the architect of your life.
Across the globe, every second, there's always a breaking story.
Kolita Njoye for Channel Africa Radio in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
Reporting for Channel Africa, I am Hilda Kekeloa in Zambia.
Our cutting-edge and hard-hitting journalism leaves no stone unturned, giving you the whole picture every time.
George Muhango, Channel Africa, Blantyre.
Reporting for Channel Africa, this is Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé.
From an African perspective, listen to Channel Africa in English, Kiswahili, French, Portuguese, and Chinyanja, informing the world about Africa.
Join us every day and know what is happening around you.
Channel Africa.
Follow Channel Africa on these social media platforms. On Facebook, Channel Africa One. On Twitter, at Channel Africa One. And YouTube on Channel Africa Radio. Our website, www.channelafrica.co.za. Channel Africa, from an African perspective.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future. On the line, we are joined by Wellington Muchechetere from Young Africa International. A project of this nature, I would imagine it's quite a huge financial undertaking, considering the scale of devastation in places in which you go to, particularly in Mozambique, that has been, you know, under quite a bit of violence from insurgency. How much of a financial commitment has this been, and how have you been able to bridge this gap?
Okay, so for the pilot phase, the budget for this project was almost 2,400,000 euros for the 18 months of implementation. Like I indicated earlier on, that this project now has been scaled up and it's also being replicated in other countries. We now have a commitment of over 10 million to support these young people. This is also inclusive of Cabo Delgado, where the project started in 2019.
Mm. Now, in terms of the project itself, I would imagine taking on a project of this nature is quite a challenging endeavor. And how has COVID-19, as a new challenge that is coming across, threw a spanner in the works in terms of the way in which you had to change how you work?
Yes, indeed, because COVID-19 has been a challenge. It took us all by surprise. And I think in March last year, we had to suspend some of our training. But also it gave us an opportunity to reflect on our training methodology. And we piloted a training methodology which we termed the industry attached model, because you realize that despite all the lockdowns that were happening, there were some sectors of the economy that were still open, such as commerce and industry. And you find most of our skills that we offer, they perfectly align with those sectors. So we engaged with MasterCard persons or local business people from, you know, the informal and formal sector, where we negotiated with them to take in some of our young people, maybe two or three young people in the whole group. Then we identified those. So these young people were placed in those industries companies or businesses. And with that, then they were, from the very day, they started to actually get training that is on the job production, with our trainers making rounds to offer the theory part of it. So for us, I think, it was a blessing in disguise in a way, because it helped us to sort of come out of our shell, our business as usual mode, and it helped us to really come up with these new models, which we feel now is something that has worked perfectly well, and we intend to improve it and replicate it to other sectors and other countries where this project will be going.
Talk to us about some of the partnerships that you've had to strike to be able to get a project of this nature going.
So for this project, it was a partnership of three or four organizations, but we also managed to do a stakeholder mapping exercise prior to implementation of the project. So some of the partners that we were working with was IOM, that is the International Organization for Migration, Frontline Aid and its partners such as REPC, Africaid. Then we're also partnering with IdeaLab. This is a private company that focuses on coming up with tailor-made entrepreneurship training modules or curriculum. Then also we were getting financial support from the Dutch Minister of Foreign Affairs through the embassy in Maputo, the Dutch embassy in Maputo. Also, we were also working with the nine ministries in the countries that the project was being implemented. So nine ministries such as Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health, as well as other vocational training institutions such as East Telac in Mozambique. So these are the partners that we were working with for the project.
Now, in terms of the safety issues that you had to deal with, particularly in Mozambique, without delving into the politics of the day and whatever it is that is happening in terms of the politics, what were your security concerns? What were your issues that you were constantly dealing with in terms of having to keep your people safe, but also making sure that the project goes on?
Well, indeed, the issue really around security and safety was a concerning issue, considering that we have been working in Kabote. But also, it was a learning phase for us. What I would want to say is, for such insurgencies and such conflicts, you find that young people are put at the forefront of that. And we realized that in during our training program, some of the students that had registered or enrolled for the program, we had a bit of dropouts with some actually joining, these conflicts and all. So it was a challenge to try and, retain some of these young people, considering what they were being offered from the other side. And with us just giving the skills, there's always this, thinking that, I might need something that to just cater for my needs at that present moment. So we had a number of dropouts in that instance. What we also just tried to do is work closely with these government departments as well as IOM, who actually have good systems in trying to make sure that whenever we are implementing certain projects, they do some security clearance. And after being cleared, we can actually operate and implement whatever activities that we would have planned. So, it was a challenge. And like I mentioned earlier on, these young people were also young, mobile, obviously trying to flee from these areas of conflict as much as possible. So you find at some point you have a class of 20, 30 people who are enrolled in a specific trade, then maybe the coming week, you hear that they moved out to a certain area just for safety reasons. So these were some of the challenges that we were facing. But I would say we had we managed to really retain much of these young people because of, you know, the hope of getting these skills and all.
You did allude earlier on that the project was not the Mozambique, in fact, was the pilot phase of the project. And now there are other expansions that you are looking at. We're talking Zambia, we're talking Zimbabwe as well. Tell us a little bit about that in terms of the needs analysis that you had to do in these other places, particularly for the second phase of the project.
Yeah, so for the second phase of the project, we understand that most countries in Southern Africa, they are in a crisis. It could be an economic crisis. Then, of course, Mozambique, there are also certain parts like in Sofala district where there are still conflicts that are happening there. So for the second phase of the project, we have actually scaled it up to Zambia. Then, of course, Zimbabwe, we were there, but we have also expanded to other districts and other provinces. The same with Mozambique, where we are also in Sofala district and in Resano Garcia, that is Maputo province. I would like to also say that because of this intervention, we have actually received more invitations in other countries, such as Lesotho, Tanzania, South Africa, Eswatini, where we also intend to scale up this project. So the modalities around scale up to these areas are still underway, but we are hoping that start of 2022 will also be going to these areas. I would also like to say with our implementation in Cabo Delgado, this has also attracted a lot of interest from other donors. And in the coming few months, we should also be starting a project in Burkina Faso, more or less of the same nature, looking at the Horn region of the Sahel region. So these are some of the plans that we are hoping to be embarking on.
Stay tuned to Channel Africa as we continue to give you news, views and interviews from an African perspective. Remember, you can keep in touch with us on Twitter. It's at Channel Africa 1. Stay with us. We'll back after this.
Join Channel Africa every Tuesday at 8 a.m. CAT for another informative installment of Africa of the Future. You can find us online at www.channelafrica.co.za or channel 802 on the DSTV Audio Bouquet channel. Channel Africa, giving you the African perspective.
Us make a date
every Thursday, 8 a.m. Central African Time.
We bring you a brand new program, The African Passport, a pan-African stage where we visualize, dream, and explore the prosperous and glamorous Africa we want. Let me just say, we are not apologetic about it. I am Godfrey Mr. G. Madanire, and this show is inspired by the vision and aspirations of Agenda 2063, as outlined by the African Union. The African Passport on Channel Africa, the African perspective.
In the quest to find meaning from the ancient cosmic knowledge and meta-science, its connection with the knowledge capital, shaping the African mind, we explore the uncharted African brain. From the Dagon people to the Zulus, from the Maasai to the Yoruba people, join Sir Max, a knowledge premier, every Friday, 8 a.m. Central African Time, as he trots the continent to assemble Africa's top minds. From political to corporate and spiritual leaders, from scholars to rebels, from cutting-edge literature to disruptors, from scientists to athletes, Masterclass Africa is about leadership, indigenous wisdom dissemination, and consciousness that must drive the agenda of the African continent and the diaspora. Masterclass Africa, a show not to be missed, only on Channel Africa Radio.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future. On the line, we are joined by Wellington Muchechetere from Young Africa International. Now, oftentimes when there's an undertaking of this nature, you find that perhaps the powers that be are not so comfortable with letting somebody come from outside, particularly NGOs, and have a blank check, as it were. In terms of the reception that you got, particularly in your first phase, how has that been with the Mozambican authorities? How have they received this project of this nature?
So Young Africa is a confederation of organizations. So we have our head offices that are based in Harare. Then we also have a sub-office that is in the Netherlands. But we have also offices that are locally registered within all these countries. So in Mozambique, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Namibia, Zambia. So already we have a good firm relationship with the different government departments. And as I would want to say that we don't really come to impose solutions or projects, but in the design of everything that we do, we work in close consultation to the government, with the government, the communities that we operate in, as well as the young people. So I think because of that, we have been accepted and we have been received, and all our efforts really are not in isolation or just against whatever strategies and policies are within those countries. So that's why we have received that collaboration and with little or limited resistance.
Based on our conversation, I think it's safe to assume that your first phase in Mozambique has been relatively successful. Now tell us about, in terms of your target and your hopes and the dreams for the project, and have you been able to reflect on how much impact you would like to have in a short to medium term, or even long term, let's say 3 to 5 years time? How big would you like the project to be?
Yeah, exactly. What we did at the end of the project in April, we undertook an end-line evaluation just to look at how relevant, efficient, effective, as well as sustainable this project was. And from this evaluation, it helped us to come up or helped us in designing the second phase of the project. So in the next coming 5 to 6 years, we are grateful for the support from the Dutch embassy in Maputo through the Ministry of Finance, that they've already committed some funds towards the implementation of the project. So we are intending to reach out to at least 22,000 young people who are going to be supported with the defense skills training that we will be offering. But also as an organization, we have quite an ambitious target of reaching out to 80,000 young people by 2023. So this is more or less aligning to what we intend to do as an organization. And I would like to also say that we are not obviously going to do that alone, but we are going to work through other partners that we already have sort of established a relationship or some memorandum of understanding on how we are going to be training these young people for the different projects that we'll be working on. So this is what we see as our impact in the next coming 3 to 5 years.
I would imagine that scores of our listeners who listen to this show would be taking quite a keen interest on this project. And what would people do if they want to be involved, perhaps to contribute their skills, perhaps to contribute even financially to ensuring that the project is able to go forward? How can they do that?
For our contacts, we are based in Harare. You can reach us on our website on www.youngafrica.org. africa.org. We also have our Twitter handles, Young Africa Directors. Also on our Facebook pages, we are still there on as Young Africa, as well as Instagram. Then in terms of our contact details, you can reach us on +263 778 197 276 or +263 772 785 685.
Thank you for coming on to Africa of the Future, and thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. But also, we wish you all the best as you continue expanding the project across the continent.
Thank you, Leander.
Africa of the Future. Africa of the Future.
And that is Wellington Muchechetere from Young Africa International. And that's how we come to an end of this week's edition of Africa of the Future. We will be back next week with another informative installment of the show. Your Econ and Sport is up next. Please tune in for that and more here on Channel Africa as we continue to give you news, views and interviews from an African perspective. My name is Luyanda Maume. Until next time, I'm out.
May certain the joy, ya mom, may certain the joy, ya mom, may certain the joy, ya mom. Ni woi birman fumi yendo ma yendo fa yendo nane woi birman fumi yendo ma yendo fa yendo nane ni woi birman fumi yendo ma yendo fa yendo nane. Sambalobe, ya mom lile. Buri sambalobe, ya mom lile. Buri sambalobe, ya mom lile. Ne woi birima, fumi yendo ma yendo fa yendo nane. Woi birima, fumi yendo ma yendo fa yendo nane.
Tamel me se tendi yor, yoro 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 ho 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 ho.
Samawaji kendo yam nane. Yeah.